The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Get more peace of mind knowing every certified Cadillac comes with a six-year warranty, roadside assistance, and more. Now you can save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. All, like new, certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Because if it has our name on it, you have our word on it. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, it's been great to hear from General Manager Brian Danahy right here on the podcast. Appreciate the great feedback on that. And right now at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, the Mission Morse Summer Event is on at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. They're out to sell 3,000 vehicles in 60 days with the guaranteed lowest prices, all backed by Morse with their price protection promise. For full details, visit edmorse.com/promise. And Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa right there. Head on down there, just west of 275 on Fletcher. EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. And also, of course, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Happy Thursday, June 21st. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring the Sage, the great Sage, wearing his The Sage t-shirt today.
Better believe it, baby.
On the Ira Kaufman Podcast, I'm Steve Hisbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is with us. We are fired up. First day of summer, Ira, and we don't slow down. We keep going in full speed. I hope everyone enjoyed that Donovan Smith interview on our last podcast. If you haven't listened yet, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, Joe Bucks Fan, you can find the podcast. Listen to it. Subscribe to the podcast. It's free. Ira's favorite word. How are you today, Sage?
I'm doing well. Look, you don't want to know what I got stenciled on my underwear, do you, boys? I mean, Lee, you don't
too much information.
It says 10 and 6 in the front, right in the front, 10 and 6. Draw your own conclusions. We're 5 weeks away from training camp, gentlemen. 5 little weeks. And I want one word towering above all else as players appear at One Buck Place. Physicality. Physicality. I know everybody's worried about players getting hurt. Players can get hurt when they're cautious, too. As a matter of fact, some people think that's you're more likely to get hurt if you're playing tentatively and practicing tentatively. The stick carriers are coming out. They want physical football. I think the Bucks should give it to them, Steven.
Ira, can you please explain that you legitimately are wearing this shirt, black shirt, white letters?
Of course.
It says The Sage on it.
It was among my presents for Father's Day. And it beat the hell out of socks and a couple of books, I'll tell you that. I was shocked. Extra large, fits perfectly, beautiful. I did take a picture Sunday, and I sent it to both of you boys. And you know what? We might have to circulate it on Twitter. I think we will. I'll send it to Lee. Lee will take care of it.
Now, this came from your wife or from a fan? What's the deal?
Oh, my wife. You know, she keeps hearing, say, you know, the boys call me Sage. Javier calls me Sage. Jameis Winston calls me Sage. She's getting a little tired of it. But just for Father's Day, just for that one day, she broke down, went to a store, got the stenciling on it, The Sage. The guy looked at her and said, "You want The Sage on the front of a t-shirt? Where's that going?" My husband, he calls himself The Sage. So here we go. That's where we are.
It's a strange look for you, but I'm getting used to it.
And if I pick the Bucks to go 10-6 again, you're going to strip off the letters The Sage off this t-shirt.
So I think Lee fell over there. You're picking the Bucks to go 10-6
No, that's too early.
All right. I wasn't sure. I don't know. I'm listening to you.
I think I'm out of the prediction business, Steve, to be honest, because last year I did say 10-6, just like a lot of Buck fans. And maybe even you two clowns over there, you might have joined me in the 10-6 sweepstakes. And boy, they didn't even come close. So I think I might take a back seat in the prediction business this year.
I'm going to put you into the contract business. We're going to go that route first. A lot of Bucks fans this time of year, there's not a lot of football to think about. So they start thinking about the contract end of things.
Thought you were talking about my contract with Joe Bucks fan. Yeah, that I am interested in.
There's no contract for you. You're
none
here.
Of zeros.
If you don't want to work, don't work. All right.
Looking for 7 figures, DeKemper.
Let's start with five. So, Ira, seriously, we've got contracts on the mind because in the summertime, usually right before training camp starts, it's when Jason Light has a pattern of re-signing guys.
Levante, hey, just signed Ronald Jones. There you go.
Oh, that doesn't count. But Levante David redid his deal. after his third year in the summer, and other guys have done it that time as well. You know, a lot of fans are wondering, hey, the class of 2015, Lee and I called it the Grand Slam when it went down. Three of those guys are unsigned. Quan Alexander, Ali Marpet, Donovan Smith for 2019. Now, the Bucks don't have a lot of salary cap room, but I want to note that, you know, you're welcome. Every team is welcome to go over the salary cap for 2019 right now. They can sign whoever they want, but when September 1st rolls around of 2019 and teams have to cut down to get under the salary cap, that's when it all matters. So, Ira, how would you proceed with those three guys? And then tell us, what do you think is going to happen? Because it's on the minds of a lot of fans where these cornerstone-type players are going to end up.
I'll tell you how I'd proceed, Mr. DeKemper. I'd proceed cautiously. That's how I'd proceed. I'm in no rush. I'm in no rush coming off a 5-11 season. Some people think Quan Alexander wasn't very good in 2017. They didn't think he had an exceptional season. I think he had an okay season. Not great. Not what he's capable of doing. How can you have a great season at middle linebacker when you give up the most yards in football? Very hard to juxtapose.
That's a hell of a point.
Those two things. So, you know, Ali Marpet's been bouncing around like a pinball. I like to see what he does at left guard. Didn't we ask Donovan Smith, why is he playing left guard? He's playing right guard in the first year. First 2 years, he looked very good. Smith doesn't have an answer. Hey, well, they want him to play with me, and I want to play with – is that a good enough answer?
No.
Donovan Smith himself right now, I think we got him kind of middle of the pack, left tackles.
It's fair.
Not going to be in a rush. You know, and he doesn't mention Jameis Winston, who's also, you know, the crown prince of the class of 2015. A lot to prove there. So, Lee, long way to say, I'm proceeding very cautiously. I'm in no hurry.
Steve and I got roasted 2 years ago when we were on the Big Dog Show, the great Steve Dumig, and we stated at the time, and we wrote this, Steve and I did, that the Bucks had a limited window to make a run at the Super Bowl. This is why, this very subject we're talking about. ESPN ran a thing about they looked at everybody's salary cap, and Field Yates did, and he came to the conclusion that it's not out of the realm of possibility. You will not see JPP, Vinnie Curry, and DeSean Jackson on the roster next year. Why? Because the Bucks have limited cap space. Those three guys have no more guaranteed money on their contracts after the 2018 season.
Is part of that opening the bank for Jameis Winston? Is that,
well, you'd have,
part,
yeah. They, you know, he explained, yeah, you know, yeah. Obviously Quan, Ali Marpet, Donovan Smith. Yeah, he didn't mention Winston, but that goes without saying. There's some Light's going to have to do a hell of a shell game in the next. In the coming months.
Steve, Winston's the centerpiece. No matter how you, money-wise, focus-wise on the field, it all comes down to number three, Steve. And in a way, they were fortunate the first 3 or 4 years, not so much year four, but certainly the first 3 years, Lee, that they didn't have a lot of money tied up at the quarterback position. It really hamstrings some other teams.
Yes, it does.
It does. Sometimes you got to go to your quarterback and ask him to take less money. Brady's been fantastic about that. Maybe Breeze. Gives guys breaks to be able to afford more talent around them. Not every quarterback's willing to do that. But, Steve, at some point, if the Bucks have a decent season, if Winston has a decent season and they commit to him long term, he's gonna chew up a sizable part of that salary cap, Steve, and it's going to have ramifications for the rest of the roster.
Jameis, I didn't bring him up because he has his fifth-year option for 2019. So if he's on the roster, he will earn $21 million. Now, what's unclear, Ira, I've asked many people about this. I can't get a clarification, and I even talked to you about this. If Jameis is suspended for one game, will that nullify the guarantee, the fifth-year option, as a guarantee? How will that change the guarantee for that season? So, whatever. We don't have to go there, but that's out there. It's interesting because we know the NFL's a copycat league, right? I was almost stunned earlier this spring when Dirk Cutter said he sort of admitted the copycat thing with the Rams doing their run-pass options.
Yeah.
Of like, I mean, come on.
Cutter's been doing this 20 years.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you change every year, Dirk. You know, RPOs, whatever. Anyway, and then he got Bajakian is out there saying, well, I watched the Eagles. I thought I was going to find some sort of great innovation on red zone, and all they did was catch the ball. They hit the open man. You know, I didn't find any. And then Cutter's a lot of mixed messages. But one thing, Ira, I think the Eagles winning the Super Bowl with a quarterback not making a lot of money, you know, that's no coincidence that all of a sudden...
Not making a lot of money for now.
Well, in the year they won the Super
Bowl.
That allowed them to have this 8-man defensive line rotation, you know, which when all of a sudden Jameis bumps up to $21 million, you can't have all these bodies.
Which is what the Rams are doing right now.
Yeah, the Rams are dealing with that, but they're doing because yes. they can, because Goff isn't making a lot of money yet. Exactly. And you had Case Keenum not making much with the Vikings last year, but they still had quarterback salaries on there. I don't know. I mean, for me, Ira, I'd love to hear what Lee thinks. I would lock down Kwon Alexander because I think he played well when he was there. He's the spirit of this team defensively.
Yeah, he has a tangible value. Yes. I think Steve's right about that.
And he's also younger. I mean, he came into the league. He's going to be 24 in August, Kwon. And I just think he's good
football
player.
He does set the tone for this defense. Good or bad, he sets the tone.
Well, the Bucs like to call him, when I say the Bucs, you know, front office and coaches, Jameis of the defense.
Yeah.
And I think you have some potential issues there just because Jason Light, not Mark Domenech, Jason Light gave Lavonne David his extension 1 year early after three seasons. And now Kwon is in the same boat. It's hard to put two guys together like that when they're not on the same plane. So I'd give it to Kwon, but I would say Marpet and Smith, let them battle it out. Let them go through this whole season pushing each other. Hey, man, we're in a contract year. Let's just drive each other to make millions and millions of dollars. I wouldn't touch those guys.
Lee, there's guys that you have flexibility. I'm looking at like a Brent Grimes. Suppose one of these cornerbacks, or two of them. Suppose Hargraves has a good year, you know, at nickel, mm-hmm. and Carlton Davis is the real deal. Maybe you got to look at Grimes, differently for 2019. He's a $10 million figure. And then you got Will Golston. You got Sweezy, you got DeSean Jackson. You got pieces that might be off the books, Lee, depending on what happens and if you're a little cash-strapped. But that salary cap goes up every year, Lee.
It does.
Every year.
It does go up. I don't know when Golston's guaranteed money is up. I don't know. I mean, there's no question he's being way overpaid.
Suppose Vita Vey is the real deal. Then that gives you flexibility in the D-line.
Well, I wrote Tuesday morning on JoeBuckScan.com, this entire issue about, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility JPP, DeSean Jackson, Vinnie Curry are playing elsewhere in 2019. The key to that, there's two keys. One's Noah Spence.
Yes.
The other is Vita Vey. Vita Vey is all that. Well, then it's easy to say bye-bye to Curry.
Spence stays healthy.
If Spence stays healthy and blows up, it's easy to say, okay, we'll rework JPP's contract, or he's trade bait, or he just outright cut him as a salary cap. So those two guys will factor in what happens with Curry and JPP. And the reason why some people think DeSean Jackson is so, and you predicted this. You predicted DeSean Jackson would not end his three-year contract with the Bucs. The one reason why people are so, I don't know if motivated is the right word, or convinced might be a better word, that DeSean Jackson is gone next year is the alleged play of Chris Godwin. Now, you know, you'd like to see him do more. He came on strong end of the year. That's small sample size.
Yes.
If he has a really good year, there again, DeSean Jackson becomes vulnerable because you can always plug in Chris Godwin.
When's the last time we had a discussion about the Bucs being up against the salary cap, Steve? When the season ends, they got $70 million to spend. Well, they're among the leaders.
Because they haven't had a draft class like 2015 in ages. So, Lee, just going back, though, Lee, the remainder of guys, those three guys on the 2015 class, what would you do with how would you approach them?
That makes sense what Steve said. You wait, because if Donovan Smith has a bad year, you can get him cheap or a so-so year. Then it's a roll of the dice. If he has a great year, it's going to cost you. Same with Allie. I cannot see Ali Marpet not being with the Bucs in 2019.
Here's the next factor, Lee. A 6-10 season, you got a new regime coming in. Yeah. You got a new regime coming in. And they didn't draft these guys. They might look at them with different eyes.
Very true. But I also look at the landscape of offensive lines in the NFL. It's an offensive line crisis. The Bucs are not in that crisis. So, you know, why would you – I'm just speaking objectively here. Why would you want to create a problem where you don't already have one?
Yeah, I agree with Lee, and because what coach is going to scoff at good offensive linemen?
Well, there are Lovie Smith mentality out there.
That's true. They may not be great, but if you have a couple of good offensive linemen locked down, a new coach has way better things to worry about. It's interesting, Ira. It's going to be very interesting to see what Mr. Light does, and I have to say, I wouldn't be upset if he re-signed all three of them, went over the salary cap, and said, the rest of the roster, hey, whoever doesn't play well is getting cut next year because we're already over the cap. I'd love to see something like that. It'll be fun, but I don't think they'll do that. I don't think Team Glazer.
My final word, Lee, if they don't run the ball well for a third consecutive season, then I'm wondering what kind of offensive line I have.
I'm just the opposite. If they have another rotten run game, Light and Cutter in trouble. If Steve and I can see they needed the run game for 2 years, and this would be
but
year
you don't,
three.
But you don't want to blame the offensive line as part of the problem?
The reason why Steve and I were not convinced the offensive line was garbage last year, we both saw holes. Doug Martin didn't see those holes for whatever reason. And, you know, at some point, the running backs have to be addressed. Now, Peyton Barber, nice guy, great story. He was undrafted for a reason. He has parallels to Ernest Graham. That's a great – you brought that up a couple weeks ago. That's a great analogy. But you know what? If the running backs aren't getting it done, go out and get a stud freaking running back for a change. Quit nickel and diamond these guys like your Snoop Dogg playbooks in the fifth round. Or you know, Ronald Jones apparently had catching issues that, you know, there's some whispers. That,
right.
And Steve's seen some things that, right. I don't know. And he didn't catch in college. Well, we're not professional scouts and we're seeing this. So what's the professional scouts on the salary the Glazers seeing?
All right, Ira, it's fun. I'm glad you brought up the running game and the O-line because I pulled something from Donovan Smith. For those who haven't listened to him, you can go back. But you asked him about that, the sort of the fade of the running game, and he had a little interesting take in there that's worth exploring. And we've got some new stuff on Ronald Jones as well. But fans, they need to text TAKEOVER to 345-345. Text TAKEOVER to 345-345. That's the Bourbon Street TAKEOVER. The road trip of the Stick Carriers, Bucks fans, everyone's invited. Ira will be there. Lee will be there. Courtesy of fanretreat.com, who's helping organize the event.
The commish will be there.
The commish, Mr. Pulaski, will be so jacked up after his vacation. So fired up for this make or break Bucks year. I don't even know what to say. I know he's just fuming and not fuming, but angry. He's angry with happiness. He just can't wait to get started.
And this is a month after the training camp takeover. There's two takeovers.
After the training camp takeover, which Bucks haven't released the dates yet. Frankly, I'm starting to think the Bucks are a little bit scared of what's going to happen at the training camp takeover. They want to be fully prepared.
Shouldn't you embrace it, Steve? Shouldn't you?
It's a strange organization, Ira. Very strange organization. As you have learned very well over the last 10 days, it's gone to new levels. But that's not a topic.
If they have that takeover, if they have an indoor practice, the date of the takeover, that's going to be insane. You were in an indoor practice facility last week. That would be
acoustics
insane.
Acoustics are outstanding. Outstanding.
Was that the acoustic?
Acoustics are outstanding,
Oh, it'll be fun. Now, but what also is going to be even more fun is that Bourbon Street takeover. There's over 400 fans who've texted for information. I'm sure there will be hundreds actually going to the event. Going to be a lot of fun. Great way to kick off the season. FanRetreat.com. It's your home for all event tickets, concert tickets, Bucks tickets. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code. That's always good. Hotels, airlines, that's the same thing. No, it's not. Hotels.
Steve, we know a Buck fan that all of us know that is renting out a suite at the Superdome with his buddies.
It's not uncommon. It's not uncommon. And I'm sure, you know what, and that those guys will be at the event the night before, the big Bucks fan retreat party, fanretreat.com. Remember, text TAKEOVER now. It doesn't cost anything to 345-345. You know, I hate on radio commercials when they say, the FCC makes them say, you know, standard messaging rates apply. Come on. Who pays for a text message?
Thank you.
Come on.
Steve, has other teams, to your knowledge, announced their training camp schedule?
Packers
Are the Bucks lagging here?
The Bucks are lagging here. I was told that they'd be lagging. It's, you know, I don't know if I'm supposed to say why, but it's not anything sinister or weird. There's just some last-minute planning that's going on with that. So
it's a new setup, as you saw, Ira, where they used to have bleachers and they had trees. Those are gone. I'm sure they're pondering about using the indoor facility. Obviously, it has bleachers in there. It can hold, what, 2,500, 3,000?
That's what they say. Oh, I got a great question about that for both of you guys. This came to me in the shower the other day.
Oh, that's too much information right there.
Of course, you know.
Wait, which is worse, that or what's stenciled on your underwear?
Yeah, nothing tops that. I don't even know what to do with that.
I said 10-6 are right. 10-6 is right in the front, where it belongs.
Hanes or Fruit of Loom?
Hanes.
Now, listen here. Last year, the Bucks did not. This is exciting for you guys, especially because you guys lean in this direction. Last year, the Bucks didn't have the indoor facility for training camp, right? So when they were doing walkthroughs, sometimes they would do them at night if they could, or they'd be out in the heat. Regardless, they're out in the heat doing walkthroughs. Well, maybe if they do the walkthrough periods indoors in the air conditioning, maybe Cutter will think, these walkthroughs are taking nothing out of our guys like they were last year when we're out there and it's 91 degrees. Now we can play harder when the pads are on and we're really practicing, because I want, they have a little more energy because they're not burning it through these standing in the sun for 2 hours.
Look, Lee, Steve's got his finger on the right topic as far as I'm concerned going into training camp. And I talked about Cutter. I talked with Cutter about this the other day after he came off the podium. The restrictions, you know, here's your word, they're draconian. By the league. You know, every team has to adhere to them at the risk of a fine. Everybody's big watching fine. Everything. Big. Everybody's watching everything at the league office.
Yeah.
They don't want the Bucks doing it, and you know, they don't want the Vikings doing it, you know, in Mankato, Minnesota.
What happened to the Ravens?
That's right. So, Lee, how much flexibility do you have under these enhanced, stricter rules towards contact and physicality? Are there some ways around it where you can still be within the rules, but you can stress physical play, tackling, which has been a big problem around here? Boy, I just can't get that Arizona first half out of my mind. I just can't do it. I just can't do it. I remember sitting there. I'll never forget it. Sitting there with my wife. And, Lee, you were watching it, maybe at a sports bar or whatever.
No, I was at
home. And I'm telling you.
Wish I was at a bar.
By the time Palmer gave the ball to Adrian Peterson in his bread basket, he hadn't taken his first step yet. But watching it on TV, you look at the big picture. Mm-hmm. And I would say to my wife, that's an 11-yard gain.
Yeah.
He hadn't gone one step yet. The holes were so bad. Oh. I've never seen anything like it. It's as bad as I've ever seen.
Isn't that the only game? Decent
40
game?
Years of football. Yeah. It's as bad as I've ever seen.
I mean, you've been in the NFL so long, you went to a bar with Bobby Lane and he got carded.
Not bad there, Lee. So,
but the holes were the size of these picnic tables.
Steve, I'm asking the question, you know, what would it look like if Cutter wanted a more physical camp? How would he do it? Can he do it? And would fans notice? I think they want it bad. You know, with all these new defensive linemen, these physical guys, Bo Allen is physical. You know, Vita Vey, of course, is physical. Pierre Paul is
Curry.
Physical. Curry. How's it going to show up? How's it going to show up in August, Steve? Does Cutter have the flexibility to do it? He didn't have an answer for me. He didn't have an answer for me. I think he's still going to have the same principle. Let's go into that first game in New Orleans healthy. That's just like every other coach thinks, too. But I'm telling you, Lee, if you're cautious, you know, you can get hurt that way, too.
Yeah. We at least I got this implication, talking to coaches, talking to players, and I've used this phrase before. I think the coaches know their backs are against the wall. They got to win this year. Or there's going to be some guys looking for work come January. They got to win this year.
See, and a guy like Buckner's not going to give guys the easy way out.
No, not at all. So, you almost expect Cutter to change something up in training camp, because if it's same old, how, you know, why would you logically think something's going to change?
You think the presence of Ryan Jensen in the middle of that O-line could stir things up quite a bit?
Well, according to Jameis, he already has. And they're only wearing helmets, you know.
I think Buck fans would embrace it.
Oh,
they,
yeah.
They'd embrace a couple
yeah.
of skirmishes.
No, you don't want it to get out of control, like apparently the Giants got out of control and think the tackle they signed, that he got hurt because he got rolled up in a brawl.
Yeah, we don't need that.
No, that's out of control. But you know what? I'll say this right now, and this is one of my favorite subjects only because Dirk Cutter goes bananas about it, and I love to see his reaction, why he gets so angry. And he does get angry about this. When people, specifically Jenna Lane, ask him about fights in practice, I mean, it's like you told him, I just robbed your house.
That gets
he goes
under
nuts.
His skin, Steve. There's no question about
so
it.
So speaking of under Dirk Cutter's skin, Ira, so he finished with the podium. He's going on vacation. You break into a sprint, and you catch him before he gets to the door. As he's getting to the door, $1.
Actually, he was talking to two people, and he asked if I could take a picture of the three of them. And so I took the woman's camera, and I got ready to snap it, and Cutter said, in front of the other two people, this could be a whole new vocation for you, Ira. I hope you're better at it than the one you're doing right now. With a little smile, a little Cutter smile. I didn't take it personal. And then I snapped off a beautiful centered picture of the three of them. Maybe he's right. Maybe I should switch jobs, Lee. What do you think?
All right. So I was watching you. I've always got my eye on what you're up to.
Man.
You had Cutter there cornered for about 4 minutes. The door was open. He could have left. He could have just turned and said, take it easy, Ira.
And how did you describe my posture in this endeavor?
You were right up into him like a like a viper who's already out of his coil. He's right. So did he give you anything you can share here?
I'm not poisonous, Steve. Let's get that on. Well, he was affable. That's number one, which I took great delight in because he snapped at me a couple of times over the last few months. We had that. Did I tell the story about the text that he sent me? Did I ever tell our fans that story?
Not on the podcast, no. Save that for the end.
That's a heck of you know what? I'll save it for another time. I will. I'll save it for another time.
But I don't want to get in trouble with Cutter.
He was affable. He was affable.
All right. Let me just put it out here right now because I just made a note here, Ira. Next podcast, Ira will tell his text message story with Dirk Cutter.
I'll clean it up a little bit. He'll clean it up a little.
You don't have to even clean it up, Ira. Yeah. But you're with and it ties to Cutter's wife and the NFL owners meetings and the whole thing.
All right, that'll be for next week's podcast.
Next podcast, yep.
I can just hear Javier and poor Richie Lou saying, "Oh, this is gonna be a good one." You know, look, I brought up the physicality training camp to Cutter, didn't get a specific answer. I think he feels hamstrung to a certain degree, just like other coaches. Gruden is gonna go crazy.
You're still allowed to tackle to the ground. You're still allowed to hit. I mean, come on.
I know what you mean. He said, you know, it's important for guys that you don't know, guys that you don't know what they can do. You know, the Carlton Davises, the MJ Stewarts, the Ronald Joneses, the Vita Vays. But, he's not worried about Quan Alexander. He's not worried about Levante David in training camp and he's got to get the tackling down. He's not worried about those things. So he's going to pick and choose his spots. I mentioned the Winston investigation. All we want is an answer. All we want is an answer. So we can prepare.
Yeah.
You know, frustrated.
Well, that's only fair.
Who's not frustrated in that building, Steve? The groundskeeper's frustrated over this Winston investigation. So, you know, it was a pleasant conversation, but there were no headlines that came out of it. No headlines.
Sage, one guy I'd like to see involved in a more physical training camp, and I think Cutter would too, is Ronald Jones. Right? Because he is a big X factor on this team. We know Dirk Cutter shies away from rookie running backs. He went out of his way to – I asked him about, hey, Peyton Barber coming in as the number one running back, coming in as the guy for the first time. How did he handle spring and the maturity? And Cutter didn't say, well, it's open for competition. He's not the – we don't have number ones and twos yet. Cutter rolled.
He waxed and
he rolled white right with it. He stood up straight. Oh, Peyton, he's 235 pounds. I get the weight report every day from the trainers, and I'm always say to myself, man, he doesn't look 235. He looks super quick, and he just rolling, loving himself some Peyton Barber. And
isn't it funny, by the way? Last year he wasn't Gale Sayers. Now he loves him.
Yeah, it's a little odd. Plus, and we can talk about this later. I thought it was neat when Cutter said he gets the daily weight sheet on all these guys who weigh in. The trainers. What was going on last year with this guy's too skinny, this guy's too fat, Chris Baker's too everything? So,
Lee, I think he's grown to appreciate what Barber can do. He can't do everything, but what he can do pretty well. And
they trust him. They trust him.
They trust him, and Lee, to think that Jones is going to take all his carries away from Peyton Barber, that's nonsense.
Well, Cutter's history suggests you were correct, Ira.
I think Jones is a change of pace guy.
Where was this lack of trust last year when the guy you're giving the ball time and time and time and time again proved he couldn't get the job done? All of a sudden, Cutter had an epiphany and Peyton Barber can be trusted? I mean, come on. Something smells about the whole thing.
So here's the thing, Ira. Ronald Jones, I think Cutter is dying to know if this guy is going to fumble. Well, what has he got? Can he handle a couple of NFL hits? Can he catch the ball in traffic where he might get his head? I could totally see him in, setting Ronald Jones up to take some hits, to take some shots, to see what his vision is and when it's really tight. And the only way to really do that to the best of your ability is to have a physical training camp and some sessions where you can really do that.
Steve, from what we've seen in Ronald Jones, in a small sample size, Lee, what we've seen, when he's in the game, he's there to run the football. He ain't there to block. A blitzing linebacker. And Steve and I watched him the other day, and right now, he's not there to catch a flare pass.
Yeah.
He's there to run. And you know what? If he runs well, it's a good draft.
Amen.
Sure.
Brother.
That would be fantastic, almost as fantastic as Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa and Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon, proud supporters of your podcast, Ira. Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa.com, Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon.com. It was great to hear all those fantastic offers to open the podcast. And while you don't have your Ed Morris Cadillac gear on today, you're excused because this t-shirt is fantastic. The Sage, I think we could probably sell at least 300 online tomorrow if we had
it. Steve's immediately to the cash register. That's just the way
it looks good. It looks good.
I don't know why, but I got Frankie Pantangelo on mine.
It looks good.
You know, speaking of the podcast, Steve, Lee has not mentioned in about 3 weeks, and it's got me very concerned.
Sims?
Whether I'm on the charts anymore. I may be permanently off. Lee used to come in here and give me the skinny.
Well, here's why. I flipped to an iPhone, and I don't have access to that any longer.
Where am I going to get that kind of information?
I take a look every other day. We're recording here, and as of 14 hours ago, you were on the charts. So there you are. You're there. Top charts, all themes, all genres.
All I need to know to keep me going. Like,
it was you and Bill Simmons and Wojciechowski, whatever his name is.
That's a national show, Steve.
Yeah.
And Wojciechowski, too.
Yeah, the basketball guy. And who else was there? Oh, ESPN's Baseball America podcast.
And we're over here breaking down a 5-11 football team, gentlemen.
Yeah.
We should take pride in that.
Great pride, Ira.
Well, you should, Ira. It's your podcast.
No, don't get the three of us here.
So, Ira, we're just going to say this and if you want to comment, you can. You know, Rick Stroud, Bucks beat writer, he's out there on his newspaper site saying Ronald Jones is going to get 15 to 20 touches a game. I think that's outlandish. I think it's more like 8 to 10 until the bye week. I think Lee and mine information on that is good, that they're going to, 10 carries a game is no slouch.
I think that's ambitious.
10?
No, 10 to 20.
Yeah, 15
20.
To 20.
I think that's ambitious. I think Steve made the right point, especially early in the season.
Yeah.
Let's see what Jones can do. How durable is he? Does he fumble? What's his ball security? How's Barber doing? Mm-hmm. A lot of factors, Lee. But certainly the first month of the season, daunting schedule, no question, the first 3 weeks. Barber's going to get the bulk of the carries, no question in my mind. The bulk of the touches. And I think he deservedly so, based on how he closed out 2017. He was pretty strong down the stretch. Mm-hmm. And he's earned Cutter's trust at this point.
Yeah, and that might be it, to answer my question earlier. He's earned the trust. Maybe Cutter didn't trust him before for Robin. Didn't have the snaps. Now, whose fault's that? We both know. But that's probably
Lee, Lee's never going to get past the Doug Martin of 2017. They're never going to get past.
Yeah,
and you know what? I don't think he should.
Steve and I, 2 years ago, knew Doug Martin was done. And
Steve, you said cut the guy. Don't even bring him back.
Gross.
That's what you said.
Actually, we argued franchise him, which I won't mention the guy's name, but someone that works in the newspaper industry in this market he didn't mention our name either, just went bananas about that. How you couldn't? Well, they would have saved money by franchising him, and has another prove it year. So,
yeah, and we're talking the franchise coming after the 2015 season. We were screaming franchise him. He's an make me earn it kind of guy. It was only $11 million or so. They paid him $8 million. We thought it was a wise move. A lot of people thought it was stupid.
He looks like a guy that plays for his contract.
It sure smells that way.
Yeah, it does.
Who knows what he looks like.
And he might have a good year in Oakland. You never know.
I'll wager anything that he doesn't have a good year in Oakland.
Speaking of Chucky, a guy by the name of, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Brad Gagnon of Bleacher Report, had each NFL team's worst mistake in the last decade. I wrote about this Tuesday morning on JoeBucksFan.com. Now there's a lot to chew on there.
Oh boy, with the Bucks. That's a tough call.
The worst mistake.
Great topic.
Worst mistake
of
this team's
decade.
Made last decade. Now, just in case people didn't read my story, I had number 3, letting Michael Bennett walk away for no good reason. Number 2, hiring Lovey. My number 1 mistake the Bucks made in the last decade, firing Chucky. This team's never recovered.
Your three, Ira?
I believe it's hard to argue with the Kemper on number 1. It's hard. I think Daquan Bowers might crack my top 3 because I'll never forget it. I was with the Trib and I was doing those draft grades on the last day of the draft. And it was hard because you got to do all 32 teams and they were sitting in the desk, and the draft ends at 6 o'clock. And you can't start that thing at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
You better be doing it, The first year I did it, I'm being serious. It was like 2001 or 2002. I didn't make deadline. I didn't make it. I had to call Mike Panetti and say, I'm not going to make it, Mike. You're screaming at me. What are you, crazy?
Panetti, there's a blast from the past.
So I learned how to do it. Anyway, So I gave the Bucks, like a B minus or something in the Bowers draft. And I remember that later that day, the same day, that night they honored Derrick Brooks. They honored him. They had some kind of a gala thing for Derrick Brooks at the stadium. I was invited. There's Raheem at the bar with Dominic, you know, and they're having a couple of toasts over a great draft. Yeah, great draft weekend. Raheem says, "You do your draft grades, Ira?" I said, "Absolutely." "What'd you give us?" "B minus, coach. B minus. B minus. He dropped his Hennessy. He dropped it right on the bar." "What do you mean B minus?" He goes, "We got Daquan Bowers. We stole him." I said, "Yeah, Steele, you should go to prison for that." "Who's Daquan Bowers?" "We're taking it, you know, it's a calculated gamble. We think we stole him." Dominic's over there nodding in agreement over there. I go, "I think the guy's going to be a stiff. There's a reason that nobody took him in the first round." And the guy was a stiff. And by drafting him, they thought they had the right guy. Maybe that's a reason for your number three, Michael Bennett. So it's everything's connected. Everything's connected. Bowers had the job, Steve. Never forget it. Tells you all you need to know about Mr. Bowers. And by the way, he loved to talk in that locker room.
He was actually very cooperative.
Yeah, very cooperative.
To his credit. And what I mean by that is he was getting rightly crucified because it was horrible play, being out of shape. To his credit, he never turned down an interview.
He had more interviews than sacks. And that's a problem.
Yeah, that is a problem. But I give him credit for that because a lot of guys would hide. They'd be surly. He was very professional. And I give him all the credit in the world. He was always, you know, there were times I had, and I told him, I said, "I got some tough questions for you, Daquan."
Yeah.
He always handled them. He never got out of hand, never got personal. And I appreciated that. And to this day, I appreciated that. That doesn't dismiss he was a rotten player.
To me, the tip off was when Chiano, you know, said all during the offseason, Bowers going to be my left end. Bowers going to be our left end.
And whatever.
I shows up training camp. I'm out of shape. I got to work myself into shape. That was it.
Even after he got busted for having a rod up in LaGuardia.
So I'm throwing Bowers in at number two, and I'm agreeing with Gruden, and number three's up in the air right now. We'll see. But right now, I'm sticking with Gruden because, in the words of Lee DeKemper, they've never recovered. And I think you can make a case for that. They've never recovered.
You know, I'm going to go with, I guess, what's going to be a very unpopular take here on the podcast. I can't put even Gruden on my list. I'll tell you why, Ira, because this team fired Gruden, and 2 years later, they're 10-6. That means you recovered. You recovered. You were 10-6.
Fluky, 10-6.
You developed a quarterback. You started 10 rookies. You had a young team. You rebuilt in a way that Gruden never would. You had what you wanted, what you set out to accomplish. From there is where you failed. So I'm putting number one is the 2011 offseason when they go 10-6. They don't sign one darn free agent except
Got a punter, baby. Got a punter.
They get a punter. And Raheem Morris loses his rock, Rick Pisacci, alongside him, a veteran coach. They don't even bring in more veteran coaches to help out Raheem. It was the time to jump, dive. If the Bucks pulled a stunt like that 2 years ago after their 9-7 season last year, fans would have rioted. We didn't sign anybody. We just went 10-6.
What are we doing?
We're good? So,
all right, there's sort of another top five. It's not top three, but top five. Cutting ties with Matt Bryant. That's a bad one.
Was that in the last 10 years?
I believe it's about 10 years.
That was Dominic.
That's a bad one.
Yeah, very bad. By the way, this Brad Gagnon character, his number one was hiring Schiano.
Which you don't have You didn't mind Schiano.
On a professional basis, I really liked him. He wasn't the greatest
coach. First year wasn't bad. First year with Schiano was not bad.
On a professional level, just thought he was fantastic, but that's being selfish. I didn't think he was that bad of a coach, but it seemed like for every right move he made, two or three things happened that were beyond his control. The MRSA, Freeman going mental.
We've never seen anything like Schiano's second season. We've never seen anything like it. The national pundits, Steve, guys that were sitting in an office in Seattle, never came close to one Buck place. They're all weighing in on Schiano.
Mike Silver, who I've never seen in Tampa Bay.
He made a lot of enemies. He made a lot of enemies over the years, and they smelled blood in the water, and they killed him.
Piled on him.
And the Glazers thought that was very unfair.
They were right.
Very unfair. You want to say, you know, they should have won more games or the 0-8 start. That's fair.
Yeah.
But all this other stuff?
Personal.
Personal.
Yeah.
Personal.
I'll go with a couple other unpopular ones, Ira. I'm going to say signing Deshaun Goldson, when you go out and you hunt, when you sign, pay massive money for a head-hunting safety when the league is enacting rules to stop headhunting.
That's not bad, Steve.
That's the epitome of stupid. And
he was effective in San Fran.
And it was just really dumb.
How about the whole Revis affair? That's got to be in there somewhere.
Well, cutting Revis has got to be up there. I mean, it still doesn't make any sense. It's one personnel move versus that. Well, it's dumb. I can't split hairs.
Here's one for you. Being an NFL historian, you are. Revis is going to be in the Hall of Fame. We know that.
Yes.
Bennett, you can make an argument. I don't know if he gets there, but you can make an argument.
Not going to get there.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay, well, I think you can make an argument. Hypothetically, let's say he gets in 20 years from now as a veteran.
Yeah, seniors committee, yeah.
When is the last time one team, ran off two Hall of Famers for zero compensation? That's beyond idiotic.
You know, Bennett was just approaching his prime, Steve.
Yes.
And while I say he's not going to make Canton, at the same time, I want to say he was a dominant player for a few years. I think he's on the backside of his career. But I remember being at the Super Bowl between the Pats and Seattle. That's the game that ended with the Malcolm Butler interception.
Ooh.
Steve, for two or three quarters, they could not block Michael Bennett. I watched him very closely. He was all over Brady.
Wow.
All over him. Brady went crazy in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. I think that,
as he usually
I think
does.
Seattle's defense ran out of gas.
Yeah.
You know, the guy threw 50, 55 passes, you know, and they didn't have that kind of rotation like the Eagles had last year and theoretically like the Bucs are going to have. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Bennett ran out of gas, and Brady had more time. I think he went 10 for 10 in the fourth quarter against a very, very good Seattle defense.
Real quick question. What was the reaction, the mood in the press box that Malcolm Butler play?
Nobody could believe it. Their mouths were open.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, everybody expected you know Lynch to carry the ball, and then to throw the ball in the middle of the field, and to have an interception, even an incomplete pass when the end of the game, you know, when they clinched it for New England, that's a 100-to-1 shot that Russell Wilson would throw an interception, and the guy would make a fantastic, and that was a great interception.
Yeah,
that ball was a bullet. You know, you figure you knock it down to pick it off. I've never heard of a press box gasp like that.
Is that right? Yeah, they were looking at each other like, what would you say?
Never heard a gasp like that until Winston threw that final pass to Godwin. Never heard a press box.
I've heard you gasp in the press box when the buffet.
When they ran out of bananas Foster. It was very close.
Doesn't meet your standard, you're like, what am I going to eat? Two quick things. One, I don't want to hear the blowback. The Goldson thing to me spoke to a broader. It was even broader because they had just gotten Mark Barron. So you didn't need to build from the back versus the front, which I think has affected this franchise for a long time. And it combined on the heels of the Bennett deal, but whatever. Anyway, Michael Bennett, I think if Seattle had won that second Super Bowl, then history, your Hall of Fame brethren would have said, well, they won two Super Bowls on the backs of their defense. We got to look deeper at that team.
That's a good point, Steve.
Who's going in from that team? And Bennett might have had a better shot. But now I think he's got no shot. Unless he can work some miracles in Philly, he did show up for mandatory.
You know, maybe they look at Sherman. Maybe they look at Earl Thomas. Uh-huh. These guys still have years to go. Sherman's in San Francisco now,
I
believe. Yeah. So we'll see about it. But boy, what an ending to a Super Bowl. What an ending to a Super Bowl, Steve.
It was wild. All right, we got a couple of things, Ira. Donovan
Smith. Hold on. I'm not finished.
it's this podcast.
This just crossed my mind.
Oh.
Is this a potential top 10? When you look at the story behind the story. You ready?
Yeah.
Lee, I'm going to throw it out there. You're going to say, inconsequential, doesn't make it. Chris Baker, and I'm going to tell you why. Not because he wasn't a very good player. The impact he had on the rest of the guys, from an attitude standpoint, maybe I'm reading too much into it, he was a problem.
Yes.
He was a problem beyond the playing field. I don't want to get into Terrell Owens territory with bad teammate, what did he do in the locker room. But, Steve, I might make the argument that Baker is not the reason they went 5-11, but he was a factor. He was a factor. And he might have influenced some other guys in that locker room.
I don't disagree. I wouldn't put him top 10, okay.
And nobody straightened him out till the end of the year.
Well, I heard he basically walked all over Jay Hayes. Jay Hayes couldn't control him. And that's one reason why you don't see Jay Hayes around anymore. you're right. You got a great point. I could not, even though I can't stand this guy, and I think the reasons why he was not elected to the Hall of Fame as quick as he was were valid. The one thing you can always say about Terrell Owens, he produced. He may have been a cancer. He produced. Baker didn't do crap.
Yeah.
And on top of that, he, like you said, he may have been a very bad influence on other players.
You know, Jay Gruden said good player doesn't like to practice. I didn't even see the good player.
All right, Ira, then the question, my question for you is, Baker, it was the problem, the failure to cut Baker by week two when they realized this guy's a cancer. That, to me, is the problem. They didn't cut him.
Trying to save face, hoping above, hope he would
or bench him.
Either
or
one.
He was benched.
Either one.
For non-production.
Well, how do you think Clinton McDonald felt? You know,
oh, yeah, a class act.
Job to this guy.
Yeah, a class act like him.
I mean, if he was a cancer, if he's rubbing off on guys, cut him.
And that also speaks to something Steve mentioned before. I've written about it before. And this almost sounds like heresy to some people. And I love the guy to death, but I got to be honest. If Jameis is such a leader, why did he wait till Christmas to confront Baker? Why did he let Kwon wait until Christmas to confront Baker? Should have been confronted before training camp. The minute he tried to impregnate a palm tree in Jacksonville, they should have shut down on his ass.
They're young, Lee. They're young.
Well, you know, there's a lot of layers.
Winston are young. They're young.
There's a lot of layers to that. Look, Gerald McCoy was next to the guy every single day. Nobody would have not listened to McCoy.
I'm sure McCoy was fed up quite early. With
yeah, he
Baker.
Was. Steve, didn't you talk to McCoy after the last game? No, you were in Carolina. And McCoy was like, he was mad, but he wouldn't even say anything negative about Baker. But am I right,
and
Steve?
Steve, we can't let light off the hook either on this thing. And well, by that, I mean, Jason, you keep telling us that the failures, particularly in free agency, are from the neck up. It's not that the guy can't play. It's not talent. Well, maybe this year will be different. Maybe they did a little more examination, a deeper dive into guys that love football. I don't say you have to love it as much as Jameis Winston, because that's a high bar.
Yeah, it is.
You know, but you know, the Anthony Collins, the Michael Johnsons, the Chris Bakers, they don't love football. And why do we see these things quickly? And the Bucs don't find that out before they bring him in.
Yeah, and Anthony Collins has not taken a snap,
in
practice.
Not a snap.
And not even a practice snap since he left the Bucs.
And he's not 35. He's not there. Nobody wants him. Nobody wants him.
All right, Sage, you know what? I was going to get to some of the stuff from Donovan Smith, but we're gonna cut it off shortly, so I'm not going to go there. We'll save that for next podcast. Anyone who didn't listen to Donovan Smith's interview on Tuesday, it's all right there for you online, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play. You can get it right.
Honest stuff from Donovan Smith, honest.
You can get it right at JoeBucksFan.com. It was funny when you asked him about the left guard for Ali Marpet.
Yeah.
Smith said, well, you know, Ali played next to me at the Senior Bowl, and we're rooming together in training camp.
That's not good enough. Yeah.
But he had no answers for that anyway, which was just kind of funny. You would think he'd... You know, he'd have some sort of technical answer.
You know, this, how many times are the Bucs going to come out with this stuff about Ali Marpet? We're moving him to center, and we're not budging. We're moving him to left guard, and we're not budging. And you don't really get the great, you know, reasoning behind it. You don't get it. All you get is the directive, what they're going to do. And, of course, Marpet's such a team player, Lee. He's not going to say anything.
Oh, no, he's never going to say anything.
Well, maybe by next podcast, Ira, Mr. Sweezy will be cleared to play, and then he'll be cleared to play for another team. Maybe they'll just let him go, clear some cap room.
I think it's wide open for Caleb Benenock to make his presence.
Absolutely.
Don't rule out Kappa. There's a lot of love for Mr. Kappa in the organization.
I still think he's a tackle. We'll see.
You think a lot of things, Ira, but we know that you'll be back here next week for your podcast, your columns, which continue. Any parting words, Ira? Are you going to wash the Sage shirt and wear it every day? What's the deal?
Might go away this weekend, Lee. Might go visit...
Your shirt's going away?
My brother-in-law.
Oh.
My brother-in-law.
Daytona, right?
And we got to go to my son's house in Orlando, and because he's been gone all summer, and make sure that there's no flood on the kitchen floor or anything. He turned his air conditioner up to about 85. He shut off all the water. I can't even go there and take a piss after I drive 3 hours. I mean, what am I going to do? Go to McDonald's? Go to Starbucks? That's a whole other issue, Starbucks.
Oh!
All right, get out of here, Ira. Go take a leak.